Did you guys know that there's a sitcom out there about six friends living in a big city, dealing with the trials and tribulations of relationships and growing up and being a young adult that isn't Friends, but is actually about 100 times more funny? Do you guys know there's another sitcom out there about a group of nerds talking about nerdy things and struggling to understand the opposite sex that isn't The Big Bang Theory, is actually hilarious, and doesn't make you want to shove pencils into your eyes? This and much more coming up on this week's episode of Space Castle. Welcome back to Space Castle. It's your clubhouse for all things nerdy. My name is DT, and today we're going to be talking about sitcoms that American audiences have never seen, probably never heard of, but should. Now, this is not an indictment of Americans. I'm one of you. I'm not saying we have bad taste yet. That will come up later, and I apologize in advance. But for right now, these are shows that, due to extenuating circumstances, we here stateside have likely never had a chance to see. First up, we have a British sitcom from the year 2000 called Coupling. It aired across the pond on BBC Two between 2000 and 2004 and was created and written by Stephen Moffat. Now, you're going to know Stephen Moffat's name from the various other shows he's created and written for and the various awards he's won doing so. He's won multiple Hugo Awards and Emmys for his writing work on Doctor Who and his work on the show Sherlock, which he created and stars Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman. Coupling takes place in the city of London, where six friends all grapple with relationships, being young adults in one of the largest metropolitan areas in the world, and they struggle in balancing friendships, careers, and their love lives. And if this sounds familiar, well, it's actually quite similar to the ridiculously popular and very famous cultural zeitgeist, a little-known NBC show called Friends. The similarities and comparisons are fair, but a lot of people actually think that the show owes just as much to Seinfeld as it does Friends for being part of the ensemble sort of group of friends subgenre of sitcoms. The similarities to Friends are clear, they're apparent, and they're quite numerous. The main character of the show is Steve, played by Jack Davenport. He's a bloke, that's a dude for all you Americans listening, who is something of an awkward, nerdy, but handsome young professional who falls for a beautiful young blonde woman named Susan. Steve's best friend is a funny, sarcastic dude, that's a bloke for all you Brits listening, named Jeff, played by Richard Coyle, who never seems to do well with women and always ends up in awkward, hilarious situations with them. The third male in the group is Patrick, played by Ben Miles, who you'll actually recognize as Mon Mothma's friend and confidant Tay on Andor, the latest Star Wars series on Disney+. Patrick is a naive and immature yet endearing womanizer. And yeah, you can really see the similarities to Friends here, and I haven't even gotten to the women in the show. So for the ladies, we've got Jane, played by Gina Bellman, who is something of a flighty, would-be spiritualist, and a bit of a ditz. We've got Kate Izzet, who plays Sally Harper, who is an uptight and insecure lady who is largely concerned about her appearance and advancement in her career. There's those similarities once again. And then there's Susan, played by Sarah Alexander, the most well-rounded and adjusted of the ladies half of the group. Susan illustrates something of the perfect girlfriend and love interest for Steve, and Sarah Alexander absolutely launched about 1.5 million adolescent crushes in the UK when this show came out. But okay, let's move past all the similarities and the fact that the six main characters of the show are basically the six same main characters from Friends, and let's get into why Americans have never seen it, and why they should. First off, like I said before, it's a British show. It aired on the BBC. We've gotten a lot better about seeking out and discovering really great British shows here in the States, largely due to technology removing those barriers. But back in 2000, American audiences still didn't have the exposure to great British programming that we do now. So the show had that going against it, at least stateside. And at the time, I mean, here we go again, Americans still had Friends going until 2004 when it finally came to a close. So it just wouldn't have been a fit for us here while we had that huge, massive, gigantic monster of a show still going in full force. Interestingly enough, though, a season of an American version of Coupling was actually ordered by NBC towards the end of Friends because they wanted to try and maintain that audience with a new, similar show. They wanted to kind of keep the ball rolling, so to speak. Four episodes of the American version of Coupling actually aired, but it was quickly canceled after poor reviews from critics and a really, really bad reception from audiences. Largely, I think personally, because we still had Friends and people were still really in love with it, and I'm sure this sort of felt like something of a knockoff because they weren't familiar with the fact that this was actually a really successful show in England. The show was actually even attacked before it aired, largely because of the British version being you know, much more explicit and much more adult than American audiences were used to. The British side of things, obviously, they're allowed to use much more cuss words. There's even instances of brief nudity, you know, stuff like that, that American audiences just, you know, aren't accustomed to. Our soft virgin American ears just weren't ready to hear about things like sex and boobs and butts and stuff. And instead, we're much more accustomed to jokes about, you know, people's heads being stuck in turkeys and entire episodes dedicated to cute monkeys being kept illegally as pets. And here's why we get into why Coupling was such a great show. And why I honestly think it blows Friends out of the fucking water. It's the writing and the absolutely brilliant way the show was crafted by Stephen Moffat. So first of all, the cast in the show, Coupling, are just fucking amazing. They're fantastic. Their snappy and honest delivery of all the jokes that Moffat wrote is incredible. The show deals with all the normal levels of slapstick humor for a sitcom, but there are also a lot of layered, subtle jokes sprinkled in, and jokes that take time to develop, sometimes over the course of an entire episode, before the bomb drops and you're laughing so hard that you're crying. There's one episode in particular that has Jeff, once again played by Richard Coyle, attempting to pick up an Israeli girl in a bar who doesn't speak a lick of English. The entire episode plays off like really cute misunderstandings and funny little quirky sort of sign language jokes and whatnot with a chuckle here and there, until the episode rewinds and it shows you what each of the characters were actually saying to each other and how far off each of them really were in their communication and how just inadvertently badly things were actually going for Jeff when he thought he was just being this fucking stud. And then the episode ends on an absolute banger of a punchline that I won't ruin here because it is so fucking good. It's just a culmination of just how brilliantly written and constructed this show was. It's clever as fuck. The show was raunchy without being tasteless, it was honest without being grating, and it was hilarious without overstaying its welcome. While Friends lasted for like 10 seasons, it was honestly pretty long in the tooth before it finally ended, and I honestly think was not nearly as funny as when it started. British sitcoms are designed to run in short series of episodes for only a handful of years, so Coupling came to a complete and satisfying ending in just 4 seasons, and countless laughs. Honestly, I think the UK has it right. I think short-run programming that distills all the best possible material for a show into a nice complete package that ends quickly and satisfyingly, without dragging things on forever, is the way to fucking go. You don't want to drag a show on for 10 seasons until it runs entirely out of steam, or, you know, the actors become bored or become too big for the show and they just end up moving on with their careers. Coupling is a perfect example of a near-flawless sitcom, I think. And it's lightning in a bottle. At least in terms of sitcoms. Certainly not for Stephen Moffat's career, because like I said, he turned into an absolute powerhouse of a writer and a show creator. Sherlock is just an absolute juggernaut, and it launched the career of Benedict Cumberbatch, who is now a fucking Avenger. Coupling was actually on Netflix for a number of years, and that's how I ended up discovering it in like 2008. It's got a little bit of a sentimental sort of value to it, because it's a show that I discovered right at the tail end of a breakup. I was not in a great way. I was kind of depressed over it. I was living by myself for the first time. I was young. And I spent a lot of time watching Netflix. And two of the shows I really latched onto were Battlestar Galactica and Coupling. And being able to just come home from work, make some dinner, sit down, and just fucking laugh until my eyes watered watching Coupling was really important to me. It helped me through a really tough time. And I just adore the show. I think it's fantastic. But as of late, I believe you can watch it on the Roku channel. You can watch it on Apple TV, or you can download episodes on Amazon Prime. And I seriously, seriously encourage everybody listening to do so, because the show was just fucking fantastic. And our next sitcom is actually an American show that Americans didn't watch. It's okay, Americans. It's okay. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. This is a safe space with no judgment, and we're just here trying to get better and discover cool new stuff, and no one is judging you, I promise. Especially because this next show was on Fox, and we all know they have no fucking idea what to do with really good TV shows, and they inevitably end up ruining them, usually before they even get a chance to gain traction. And this particular instance of Fox having their heads up their asses is Undeclared from 2001. The show was created by Judd Apatow, the famed director of such modern classics as The 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up, and... we don't have to talk about anything else he's directed since then. Like I said, this is a safe space. But those movies did help launch the film careers of such beloved actors as Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill, Jason Segel, Craig Robinson, and many, many others. And Undeclared continued in that tradition, starring Jay Baruchel as the main character Steven, who starts up his freshman year of college at the made-up school, the University of Northern California. But I mean, really, aren't all colleges in California made up? Anyway, the show also stars a cast of familiar actors, including Monica Keena, who I had a sizable crush on in the early 2000s, Seth Rogen, Jason Segel, Carla Gallo, and Charlie Hunnam, who you'd recognize as the main character Jax in Sons of Anarchy, and, Oh, shit, he was in Pacific Rim, too. That's right. This wasn't Judd Apatow's first foray into television, and sadly, it wasn't his first foray into really good television floundering because a major network was being run by fucking idiots. He was actually also the executive producer on Freaks and Geeks. It was created by Paul Feig, which ran on NBC for one season in 1999. That show featured largely the same cast as Undeclared, with such additions as Linda Cardellini, James Franco, and John Francis Daly. That show was canceled because NBC kept moving it around in time slots and putting it up against really, really ridiculous competition, like super fucking popular game shows. The show was a great and really moving take on life as a teenager in the 80s, and thankfully, it's found a really strong cult following many years later. Sadly, however, I don't think the same could be said for Undeclared, and friends, that is why we are gathered here today. Reeling from the loss of Freaks and Geeks and still mourning that show's untimely demise, Apatow went back to the drawing board with much of the cast of young actors he'd assembled, and he put together Undeclared. The show kicked off in September of 2000 and was canceled that following March. To kick things off, NBC aired all of the episodes that did air out of order, and they conducted similar bullshit that Fox did with the show's time slot, moving it around, and then eventually moving it to Saturday evenings. Which, you know, is fucking perfect. A show made for and directed towards young adults in high school and college, being aired when young adults in high school and college were doing anything but staying home and watching TV. And thus, the show was canceled before its time, despite being really highly critically acclaimed. It currently holds a 95% approval rating from critics on Rotten Tomatoes. The show was, like Freaks and Geeks before it, a very heartfelt and genuine take on being a young adult and trying to find oneself, with a sweet layer of comedy frosting on top. And we as Americans were robbed of a show that was already very good that could have grown into something really great. Thankfully, yet another massive gut punch served up to Apatow and his cast did not hinder their careers, and they have grown into personalities who would bring us many more laughs and many more life lessons as time would go on. Undeclared deserves to be rediscovered and rewatched, in proper fucking order, by as many people as possible. You can actually find the entire first season on YouTube. I don't know if it's entirely legal, but it hasn't been taken down in many years, and Judd Apatow himself has actually endorsed it as a means of watching the show any way you can. It's actually, weirdly enough, not on Peacock by NBC, which I think is kind of strange. But on YouTube, it's absolute fucking potato quality, but it is watchable. It's like 320 resolution, and it's still like letterboxed and whatnot, so it's pretty rough, but it is watchable. Other than that, I mean, you can buy and download the one season that did air on Amazon for $2 an episode, which honestly, even though I adore the show, kind of still feels like a ripoff because there's only standard definition versions of the episodes available. And sadly, I don't really know any other way to watch it. It's been sort of swept under the rug and forgotten, and that actually really fucking sucks because it was a great show that deserved better. So check it out. Check out Undeclared from 2001 by Judd Apatow. Let me know what you think. And that chime is coming from the onboard AI for the Space Castle, which we lovingly refer to as Goldblum. He's telling me that if I don't get to a message from Earth right away, he's going to do me like Fox and cancel my entire fucking life. Let's check out that message, and then we'll come back with one more sitcom that all Americans need to experience.
I do believe it's a chess match. I do have to agree, it does not like a chance match.
Look out, we got a chance match.
Chat,
it's like a chat
smash,
man. Well, hello and welcome along to Chat Smash. We smash the chat and we chat some smash. This is all the podcast you'll ever need.
Watch this.
Looks like I got me a podcast.
Would you rather be biased or based?
Hang on a minute. Body. Dogs aren't allowed on aeroplanes, are they?
This guy. No, the dogs
they're
on the island.
They're not allowed to fly them anyway.
Oh my god, the chimps won't eat what the cats eat.
Would you rather eat only
fans
pizza for 1 year or eat no pizza for 1 year?
Only fans pizza.
Can I choose
who the bodies are?
Yeah, and also, wow.
That's just got dark.
In 10 years, am I buff?
In 10 years, what?
In 10 years, do I have big muscles?
I don't know. Who am I? Marty McFly. How do I know what you're going to look like in 10 years?
launch a nuke this way real quick. I want to test something, BB. And then
join us every time and every week for Chat Smash.
I'm here each week. Thank you.
So is Big Foss.
I'll be here a week.
So is Finn.
I'm on
Chat Smash.
And finally, we have what I think is one of the funniest sitcoms ever created, one of my personal favorites of all time, and one that Americans have largely not seen but absolutely need to. 2006's The IT Crowd. The IT Crowd was created by Grant Linehan for Channel 4 in the United Kingdom and ran for 4 series and a total of 24 episodes. Okay, so let's get this out of the way immediately so we can move on to the good stuff. Graham Linehan has since become a very problematic figure and announced himself as a complete shithead by making some very transphobic and generally bigoted and shitty statements. Such stupidity has gotten him banned from Twitter. It's gotten him ostracized from pretty much the entire fucking comedic world. And sadly has left a bit of a shadow on many of his creations, like The IT Crowd, Father Ted, and Black Books, all of which are otherwise really good shows. Space Castle has always been, and will always be, a fully inclusive place for nerds of all walks of life, including race, religion, and gender. And we're even inclusive towards people who don't really consider themselves nerds, but are interested in nerdy things and want to come hang out. You guys are always welcome. I absolutely do not endorse Grant Linehan's ignorant points of view, and to put it as bluntly as I can, trans women are women, trans men are men. Anybody who says otherwise can, as a good friend of mine from the UK says regularly, get to fuck. Removed from Grant Linehan's bullshittery and ignorance, though, The IT Crowd is one of the funniest sitcoms of all time, and one that Americans largely just aren't familiar with. I've personally struggled to separate the art from the artist in this particular case. There's actually a pretty great episode of Space Castle we did a while back. It's Starlog 1_23, so that's like episode 23 of the first season. It's called Good Art and Bad Artists, which I highly recommend giving a listen. It largely talks about how to, if you so desire, continuing to enjoy a good piece of art despite the artist being or becoming a real piece of shit, and how to appreciate a piece of art on its own merits and try and disavow the artist if you can and if necessary. But anyway, there's a lot of really good things about this show despite the fact that its creator has become a complete asset, and I really want to talk about that because there are some massively, incredibly talented people who are part of the show who are really good people, and they still deserve to have their work appreciated and viewed. The show stars Chris O'Dowd, Richard Ayoade, Catherine Parkinson, Noel Fielding, and Matt Berry. And if any of those names are familiar to you, then let's be friends. Chris O'Dowd has since gone on to become a comedic actor on both sides of the Atlantic and has popped up in all sorts of stuff, including Thor: The Dark World. And I still like that movie, so please don't hold it against him. And has become something of like a Judd Apatow / Paul Feig regular, showing up in stuff like Bridesmaids and This Is 40. It's always a delight when the man shows up and stuff. It's great. He always ends up being the highlight, no matter how big or small the role he's playing. Richard Ayoade is a goddamn fucking hilarious comedian and performer who pops up in stuff all the time. And he was actually most recently the voice of Q9O in The Mandalorian and has become a decorated indie writer and director. His movie Submarine, you need to fucking check it out. It's excellent. He is also one of the most stylish motherfuckers on the planet. The two of them play Roy and Moss, respectively, two nerds who act as the IT department in the basement of a large corporation's skyscraper headquarters, based in London, of course. They're fiercely nerdy, arguing and debating all kinds of pop culture topics. That sounds familiar. And they've surrounded themselves in their office with all kinds of classic like gaming and PC relics, action figures, posters, all sorts of really cool memorabilia. Basically, if I owned a company, my office would look like theirs. The interior of the Space Castle kind of pretty much looks like their office. I've actually paused episodes of The IT Crowd to stop and look at all the cool shit that the art director and the art department gathered and put together in their office set. It's awesome. Catherine Parkinson plays Jen. She's a recent hire to the company who's been assigned to manage the IT department. And she finds herself completely out of sorts, not knowing anything about computers, and certainly not knowing how to communicate with Moss and Roy. She does quickly become part of the IT crowd, and she develops into a big nerd herself. Catherine Parkinson is understated in this show. And she's got some moments where she gets to play manic and zany and hilarious, and they're great, but she's just got this even keel, like, straight man to all of Moss and Roy's nonsense quality, and she just plays it off in spades. Like, Catherine Parkinson is a dynamite actress, and she's just phenomenal here. She's pitch perfect. Noel Fielding is somebody you might not know by name, but I'm going to guess you'd know his face. On top of being absolutely fucking hilarious as the goth locked in his own room in the office, Richmond, Fielding is also known for being one of the main characters on The Mighty Boosh, which is sort of a cult classic series also beloved by nerds, a very popular UK series as well. And he's actually been one of the hosts of the Great British Bake Off on Netflix for a number of years. The dude is one of the busiest people on the planet, and he's also one of the funniest. And finally, I mean, y'all know Matt Berry. If you don't, then get thy heathen ass to Google post haste. In the IT crowd, he plays Douglas Renham, who inherits the company everybody works at, and he puts on one of the greatest powerhouse comedic performances of all fucking time. That's not hyperbole. The man is just a goddamn dynamo. And you might also know him from a little show that's kind of sort of popular. It's called What We Do in the Shadows on FX. I don't know if you've heard of it. If you haven't, check that one out as well. Yeah, definitely. So the IT crowd and the stellar cast of characters put forth a show filled with hilarious gags and scenarios, episodes with zany yet believable and fun plots, and some of the all-time best banger punchlines to ever appear in a sitcom. And it has nerd humor and references that are actually accurate and relatable and funny, unlike a certain other ridiculously popular and inexplicably successful American sitcom that aired on CBS for many years that stars Jim Parkinson and Johnny Galecki. The IT crowd was massively well received in the UK. It won all sorts of awards, got super high ratings, and high praise from critics. It was a huge smash hit in the UK, and yet very much a sleeper here in the States even today. But it's definitely one of those if-you-know-you-know things amongst like Britcom fans and nerds all over the world, even in America. And speaking of which, there actually was an attempt to adapt the series for American audiences. Actually, there was multiple attempts. The first attempt actually has a pilot episode that you can still find on archive.org, and it's pretty fucking awful. It's a direct shot-for-shot and line-for-line remake of the UK version's pilot, oddly enough with Joel McHale as Roy and Richard Ayoade himself as Moss, if you can believe it. And it's really fucking weird, and it's just really bad. It's not even bad like the first season of the American version of The Office, where it tried way too hard to try and mimic the successful UK version, and it just doesn't translate and doesn't hit the mark. This remake for American audiences of the IT crowd is just straight up fucking terrible in the sense that it tries to be the exact same show, and it does not carry over or translate at all. It just does not work. And this attempt has largely been forgotten, and thank fuck for that. But NBC, never letting failures slow them down, made two more attempts after that, the last one being in 2018. But neither of those subsequent attempts ever got to the point of actually even taping a pilot. So maybe they've finally given up and will stop trying. One can only hope. But the original UK series is honestly pretty damn close to perfect, and I'm glad it wasn't ever sullied by a lesser remake here in the States. If one had gotten off the ground, I actually kind of worry that even fewer Americans would have seen the excellent original as a result. That American pilot, guys, is so fucking bad that I'm actually afraid that if it was made and people saw it as like a serious thing on broadcast television, they would have been so turned off that they wouldn't have ever even bothered with the UK version. However, I do still recommend you look up and watch the pilot on archive.org because it's like this really weird like Mandela effect / Berenstain Bears alternate universe thing where it's like the fucking like weird bizarro version of one of my favorite shows of all time with actors I still really like, but it's just absolutely fucking horrible and just kind of a nightmare. But as it is, more American viewers need to see the UK version because it's great, and you can actually do so on Netflix. And I mean, how fucking convenient is that? You don't have to buy the series piecemeal on Amazon or any of that fucking shit. You don't have to like try and subscribe on Apple TV, though I highly recommend it because Apple TV is great. You don't have to go digging through torrents and shit. You don't have to do any of that because you can just pop it on Netflix and you can watch the entire run of the show. Because all y'all motherfuckers still have Netflix, and like me, you'll never, ever, ever unsubscribe from it. And I'd like to thank Netflix for sponsoring this episode. I'm kidding. And that's going to do it for this episode of Space Castle. It's your clubhouse for all things nerdy. My name is DT, and I'd like to thank you as always for hanging out with me and talking nerdy shit. Just by doing so, you are supporting the show, and I love you for it. But if you'd like to support the show even more, you can do so by becoming part of the flight crew at patreon.com/spacecastlepod. We'll name you a member of the Galactonauts crew. You get t-shirts and stickers and all kinds of perks, including perks on our Patreon, which there'll be a link for in the show notes, as always. Or you can follow the show at the handle at spacecastlepod on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Oh, and we also have a new YouTube URL as well. It's so much easier to find us now. You can find our videos at youtube.com/@spacecastlepod. I know it's a little odd. YouTube started rolling out these handle things, and I actually didn't know you could have an at symbol that early on in a URL. I thought it was more like a SEO code type thing. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. youtube.com/@spacecastlepod. I highly recommend our web series, Real Drunk, where we create drinking games for classic movies, and we play them in real time. That's it for me. Thanks so much for hanging out with me, you guys. I really appreciate you. I will catch you next week, as always. And in the meantime, be good.